The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Pippen may have been one of the best players in NBA history, but he played under one of the worst contracts in sports memory. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up in this hour, we'll vote on the best comedy special since 2000. Bubba Nuno, Pat, Mike A, and myself have all nominated our favorites. Plus, Mel Kiper Jr. is going to jump on the show. He'll let us know what the latest rumblings are when it comes to the NFL draft. And Michael Jordan isn't just the greatest player of all time. He's also the player that reformed the NBA. Before that, it was believed you had to be a seven-footer. After Michael Jordan, it was the swing man's time. I'll get into that a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. But Scottie Pippen was Michael Jordan's wingman. He was his Robin. And if you watched The Last Dance last night, which garnered 6.3 million viewers between ESPN and ESPN2, what you'll come away with is Scottie Pippen is underappreciated. Michael Jordan said last night, "Every time my name comes up, Scottie Pippen's should come up. He was the perfect complement, and he was an incredible player." Pippen's story, which was largely the focus of episode 2, was tragic and fascinating. Tragic in that Pippen grew up poor in rural Arkansas, and at one point in time throughout his formative years, middle school, high school, his father and his brother ended up in a wheelchair. His father had a stroke while at the dinner table, and from that point forward was confined to a wheelchair. In a family, I believe, with 11 children, one of Scottie's brothers got into a wrestling match at school. A bigger classmate lands on his brother and leaves his brother paralyzed as well. So as he grew up, there were two people in his household in a wheelchair. Scottie got away to the basketball courts, he said, as a place to feel free for a moment. And he was, except he wasn't that good. He went to University of Central Arkansas, and he was essentially the equipment manager. He wasn't on scholarship, and he was a 6'1", 180-pound guard. But between his freshman and sophomore years, Scottie Pippen grew, and he grew quickly, and he got better quickly. He ended up 6'7 in college. I think he eventually got up to 6'9, if I remember correctly. His skills went quickly north. He talked himself into a scholarship, talked his coach into a scholarship, and by the time he graduated, he was the fifth pick of the Seattle Supersonics in the NBA draft. A trade was worked out shortly after he was drafted, where he was sent to the Chicago Bulls. As Scottie stepped in, by the way, to the Bulls, he was full of confidence, said he was going to be better than Jordan. And that didn't go very well with some people in the locker room. Not necessarily Jordan himself, but take, for example, Charles Oakley. I think one of the moments everybody saw last night was Oakley essentially bullying young rookie Scottie Pippen, grabbing him by his jersey, slapping him. I'm serious, slapping him around on his face. But in 1991, Scottie Pippen signed an extension with the Chicago Bulls. He signed a 7-year deal that essentially paid him a little over $2 million a year. A 7-year, $18 million deal. And it became one of the worst contracts in the NBA. Pippen was the 122nd highest paid player in the league, the 6th highest paid player on the Bulls, and it ate at Scottie. It bothered him. Here's Stephen A. Smith on First Take talking about the relationship between Scottie Pippen and management, which included GM Jerry Krause and owner Jerry Reinsdorf.
What stood out to me most was Jerry Krause acting the way that he did and willing to disband this group, and more importantly, an owner in Jerry Reinsdorf who allowed him to do it. And also in the process, you have one of the greatest players we've ever seen in our lifetimes in Scottie Pippen. Yeah, he messed up. He signed a long-term deal. But to not budge at all, not to do anything for the guy, it just appeared to be so heartless. And when I look at the Chicago Bulls now and their struggles, it almost seems like it's a welcomed comeuppance because of how they were willing to conduct business back in those days.
Jerry Reinsdorf said in the documentary, "Once I sign a contract, I don't want to hear from you anymore. After that, your deal is done. Don't come crying to me." Pippen acknowledges he grew up poor and he wanted security. He had a lot of people to take care of back home, and he also says he didn't want to run the risk of an injury. So he wanted the long-term deal, even if at a lower rate. Later, he regretted it, and it ate at him, and it poisoned his relationship with everybody. It's interesting. You should look at this in two ways. One, Scottie Pippen was massively underpaid. Massively. But second, when you do sign a contract, there are trades-off. And Scottie's trade-off was that he got security, and he knew it. At the time, it's hard to secure a long-term deal and then towards the back end of that deal go, well, now that, you know, I didn't get injured and now that the bad things didn't happen and all the reasons that I took a lower, longer-term deal are past me, I want more money. That's the trade-off, right? The trade-off is I'm getting a long-term deal to lessen my risk. Once the risks are in your rearview mirror, it's not very fair to then go, well, my contract is completely underpaid. That's right. But you did it in compensation to lower your risks. The league also changed. After Scottie signed the deal, the league economics changed almost immediately. 2 years later, Larry Johnson, I read, signed, I think, an $84 million deal. Larry Johnson got a ton of money. Michael Jordan, for what it's worth, through most of his career, made similar money to Scottie Pippen. It was like $2, $3 million a year in basketball salary. He's making hundreds of millions, I'm sure, on Jordans. But it wasn't until his last couple years with the Bulls that he made $33 million a year. This is the debate on the contract, and this is what poisoned Scottie Pippen, and this is why he held out that final year. And Sam Smith, a writer for ChicagoBulls.com, was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt last night, and as Pippen requested a trade late in that run, and Krause considered it, Sam Smith said, it wasn't crazy. Listen.
If you look back at what he was trying to do and what alienated Pippen so much, he tried to do this trade with Boston when Boston didn't get the number one pick in Duncan in that lottery. And the Bulls would have had Tracy McGrady plus the sixth pick in the draft plus a veteran off that Boston team. And if you remember, Scottie, because he was so upset, sat out, you know, he went AWOL the first half of that season. So Krause had said, in effect, you know, we can win again without Scottie with what we add. You know, we still got Rodman and Kukoc, who were huge factors that season, and of course Michael. And then we wouldn't have to bottom out because we'll have Tracy McGrady to start. So, you know, in some sense, even though it was offensive to everybody and Jerry overruled them, Jerry Reinsdorf, Krause might have had a good point in what he was suggesting.
And that takes me back to where I've asked the question today: is Jerry Krause too easy of a villain? It's too simplistic, too uncomplicated. Scottie Pippen is one of the most underappreciated, and as it turns out, underpaid stars in all of NBA history. But let's be clear, he also signed the deal and got what he negotiated for. Matt in L.A. is on my phone lines. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Will Kane, how you doing? Hey, first off, man, I think it was a masterpiece last night, those first two episodes. I was a high school kid when they kicked off that first three, and then obviously this thing focuses on the last three. So in my opinion, it's Jerry Reinsdorf or Jerry Reinsdorf, the guy who imploded this thing. He could have at any time stepped in and tore up Scottie Pippen's contract, because make no mistake, Scottie is one of the top probably 15 NBA players of all time, and if you want to go power forwards, it's probably closer to top three or four. So he could have recognized it and made that right. But, you know, there was one thing that I caught early on in that thing, that, and this is why I point the finger at Reinsdorf, because he said he brought in Krause to run the organization the way he wanted it, meaning Reinsdorf. And the reason why I call him Reinsdorf is because he got six titles out of that run, but that could have easily been 10 to 12 if they would have managed it right with Jordan in his prime, man. Looking back and seeing the swag that Jordan had and just I remember, you know, in person watching this guy, you know, or not in person, but every Sunday he was on Channel 4. I mean, this guy was unreal, man. He was the GOAT, as far as I'm concerned, and Scottie Pippen was disrespected.
I got you. I agree with you, Matt. Thanks for the call. That Jordan's confidence and swag are natural. Talk about being effortlessly cool. Jordan was effortlessly cool. One more. Alexis in South Carolina is on me about this Dave Chappelle thing. What's up, Alexis?
I am. So as a big Dave Chappelle fan and a big Killing Him Softly fan, I just have to say, because that series was, or that special was done so early, wouldn't he get kind of the top dog in regards to originality and being provocative? Like, you keep saying that everybody else was more than he was, but he was doing it first, really, in almost every comedy special he was doing, his TV show. That special,
I see. I see. But that's hard for me, Alexis. I appreciate that. It's hard for me because I can't rewind myself to that time. You know what I mean? I can't rewind myself to, oh, well, this was way ahead, and you're hearing this for the first time. I'm hearing it at the same time, the same week, and I'm hearing other guys do it. So I'm like, who's doing it best? Please understand, I love Chappelle. I'm making the argument that his new stuff is better, smarter, and more provocative, better honed than that one that everybody loves. So which wins first? By the way, on this comedian thing, I did have a thought. Somebody nominated a comedian who I'd never watched before. And so I went down the rabbit hole of watching him. And he was on these specials where you would, like, be around other comedians. And I was watching, okay, it was Patrice O'Neill, go into it and get after Bob Saget. And they were making fun of each other. And it was like behind the green room and where all comedians are, you know, busting each other's chops, like the way that, you know, guys do. But I wondered, do comedians do that in 100% good nature? Because there were moments where I was like, that doesn't feel nice, but yet, is it okay? Do you always feel like, oh, he wouldn't do it if he didn't like you the way guys do? Or is some of it like, I hate you and that's why I'm cutting you down? I need to know the answer to this. All right, best stand-up special, we vote next on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud. Then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
I did my homework. The fellas did their homework. And it sounds like the listeners did their homework as well. Best comedy special since 2000. It's The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to the wrap-up podcast, hosted by Jalen Jacoby, immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. We're going to vote on the best comedy special since 2000 in just a moment. Brian in Illinois is on the phone lines. What's up, Brian?
What's up, guys? I really, really enjoyed the special, like most of the viewers. I'll tell you what, growing up in Chicago, I was a freshman in high school, and Michael was a rookie. You know, he made the playoffs his rookie year. They lost to the Bucks in 4 versus Moncrief and the boys, then he broke the ankle. But when you look back on the whole situation, you know, Chicago winters, anybody been out there? I mean, it can be muggy, it can be cold, windshields 400 below, accidents, slush over the street. But Michael had that thing, he lit up the city. You know, and if you were a who's who, or you wanted to be a who's who, you were at the United Center walking around that lobby before the games and at halftime, and man, it was just a special time. And, you know, Reinsdorf did screw it up. You know, he had the power to step in and make an exception to his little rule, I don't negotiate, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We could have made it better, man, you know, and all that Tracy McGrady stuff. You know, you don't break up a dynasty. The Cubs tried to do it for 100 years, right? It took 100 years to win a title. So, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think it was depict really accurate. Like I said, I used to go to the games all the time. I was actually a ticket broker out there at the time. And I remember selling guys tickets from Australia. You know what I mean? Guy went to Australia. Yep. He wanted to spend his 30th birthday watching Jordan play with his son. So, I mean, it was like, it was an event. And I don't think we're seeing nothing like it. I think Kobe and Shaq were pretty a big event, you know, when they hit the scene with Phil. But, I mean, it was something special. I mean, you were there.
Yeah, Brian,
you know,
I appreciate the call. Around it. I understand. And that's coming from the place where the Bulls weren't a big deal in Chicago before Michael Jordan. It was Bears. It was Cubs. It was White Sox. All right, let's do the voting. By the way, you can catch that. The Next Last Dance, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Afterwards is the Jalen and Jacoby podcast breakdown. It is, wait, Nuno, what was that thing you were highlighting? Presented by AT&T and State Farm?
You already did that. What I was highlighting is Tim Floyd was on ESPN 104.5 today in Baton Rouge, and he said that Jerry Krause tried to replace Phil Jackson before or after the 95-96 season, and that even Floyd himself had told Reinsdorf that that Jerry doesn't understand that these guys are basically the Beatles, and if I'm you, I would not do this.
Why'd he want to do this so bad? He just hated Phil? I don't understand. I mean,
that's what it seems like.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get more into that because I want to get into whether or not Jerry Krause is an easy villain or not. But let's go ahead and go to our standings. On the best of a certain genre right now, scroll up for me, Nuno. This is our standings on our movie nominations. I'm having internet issues. So go ahead and tell me, what are the standings right now, Mike A?
So the standings are Will leads with two bests. Me and Bubba have one best. Bubba also leads with two worsts. Me, you, and Pat also have one bad, worst movie.
Okay. These are the nominations for best comedy special since 2000. Will, Bill Burr, you people are all the same. Mike A, Dave Chappelle, Killing Them Softly. Bubba, Norm MacDonald, Hitler's Dog. He already got last earlier in the show. Nuno, Patrice O'Neill, Elephant in the Room, and Pat, Louis C.K.'s Live at the Beacon. Let's do our vote, on which was the best among these. Now, several of us are having trouble, so let's go with the guys who are not having trouble first. And that was Mike A. and Pat. Mike A., you go first. You thought there was a clear number one. Who was it?
I did think there was a clear number one, and it was Dave Chappelle's Killing Them Softly. I think all the rest were very good. Will, I think you picked a great comedian. I don't think you picked the right special.
What should I have picked?
I don't know. I'd not seen too much of Bill Burr, but I could tell how funny he was. I just don't think that was the best of the ones you could
I think
have picked.
That one's my favorite because it's got, I love the Arnold Schwarzenegger is a great man thing.
Had great moments. Patrice
no
O'Neal.
No reason to hit
was
a woman. The no reason thing. Or how about how his dog mimics his attitude? When he's, you know, that's
yeah, that it was good. I thought Patrice O'Neal was probably second best. That's the one I'll go with. I was pleasantly surprised with that one. I think
we feel the same about each other. I think you picked the wrong Dave Chappelle. If you picked Sticks and Stones, it might have been different. Did we get Pat's vote? I know he's not in the room, but he said there was a clear winner as well. Do you know what it was, Bubba?
Yep, I got it from old Pat, and he is sticking with his own. He has picked Louis C.K. as a clear number one.
Okay, that means Bubba, Nuno, and myself, we're struggling between two, okay? Nuno, go ahead. Who are you struggling between? Who are your two?
So I'm actually struggling between the one I picked, Patrice O'Neal, and Louis C.K. I enjoyed Bill Burr, but I don't think he was into that level. So I'm going to just continue the trend.
Oh, come on. Of course you are. Of course you are.
No, and pick myself.
Every week he's done that. Every single week.
No, I'm not. I'm the reason you won the first week.
So he's only done it every time since the first time.
Yeah, he's done it once the first time. All right, Bubba, you're struggling between who and who?
I think at this point I've narrowed it down to Louis C.K. and Dave Chappelle. Although I will say the Patrice O'Neal, who I've never seen his stuff before, the Natalie Holloway stuff, I was dying at that stuff. I thought that was great. The missing girl, I thought that was great.
I thought for sure you'd be a Bill Burr guy, Bubba.
You can't pick Pat.
I like Bill Burr too. I mean, this is like I was saying before. I almost want to put them all at number one and Norm at number two. But I just think, like we talked about, they're all kind of the same.
Guys, he
themes.
Is struggling.
You know what I'm going to go with here? I'm going to go with Dave Chappelle. My reasoning is because Not only was it very funny, yeah, well, because of Pat, no. Not only was it funny, but it was his first special. He was 26 years old. Everyone else, that was their third, fourth, fifth, whatever special. He set the tone, and it was still great. And it was a great special.
Bill Burr didn't get one vote. Oh, my gosh. You guys are bad.
He might have one vote. We didn't get yours yet.
Yes, and mine's down to two, okay? Louis C.K. got third for me. I liked it fine. I like him. He's funny. But this came down to Bill Burr, which held up. I think it's hilarious, that special. I'd never seen Patrice O'Neill before, and I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. So it came down to those two for me, Bill Burr versus Patrice O'Neill. If I vote for myself, which I would, I think, Bill Burr, then y'all's Chappelle vote's going to win. If I vote for Nuno, which that put me 2 weeks in a row voting for him, and he never votes for anybody but himself, then it's a tie between Patrice O'Neill and Dave Chappelle.
Well, I think the callers have already spoken on who would break that tie.
Chappelle's way more popular, but Patrice O'Neill, that was really, really good. I think we can all agree. Yes?
It was my
really
number two.
Good.
It was my number two. I laughed the hardest, but I laughed the most at Chappelle.
Yeah, I think with Patrice, I think he had some gems, but then I feel like for a long time it kind of trailed off. But like I probably did laugh the hardest at some of his stuff in the beginning, and then it was kind of trailing off, then laughing a lot, then trailing off, then he closed pretty good.
All right, I'm voting for Bill Burr because I think it's the answer. I think he's the best one.
Yeah, I mean, unlike Nuno, you should just do it correctly and pick what you think is the best and not just pick for your own.
I'm not going to game it. I'm going to leave it with Bill Burr. So there, I guess that makes Dave Chappelle the winner because he got two votes and everybody else.
I think that makes me the winner.
I voted it fifth. All right, there you go. Dave Chappelle's Killing Them Softly got number one here on The Will Cain Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. It's draft week. We're hyped. We're going to do our show mock draft tomorrow. We need some advice from an expert. We got one. Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN's NFL draft analyst, is on the phone lines. What's up, Mel?
Will, how you been, pal?
I've been good. So here's what I'm hearing, right?
Which okay.
Guys like you are saying. So you've got the Broncos possibly going up, the Jags possibly going up. If somebody's going up, and we're going to see this, if somebody's making a trade up, what are they going to go get? Like, what's the apple of everybody's eye? What's the demand that they're trying to chase?
Yeah, I think for Atlanta, say, going up 16, maybe to 9, would be cornerback C.J. Henderson from Florida. Maybe a receiver, if you feel there's one guy, Will, you got to have out of Jerry Jeudy, Alabama, CeeDee Lamb, Oklahoma. Maybe you move up to get that particular player. Kenneth Murray, linebacker, Oklahoma's hot right now. Say you're the Baltimore Ravens at 28, and you want either Murray or Queen. Murray goes, and maybe you move up to get Queen ahead of, say, New Orleans in New England at 23. Maybe you try to move up with the team there. If Minnesota would move down, I don't think they would. Maybe you have to move up with Jacksonville at 20 if they are not interested in Murray, or Vegas at 19. But I could see something like that happening. I think the offensive tackles are going to be gone, so I don't think there's any movement there. I do think Kalyvon Chaisson, who's really the only pass rusher after Chase Young that's exciting, Will, in that first round. I think maybe somebody would move up to get him, maybe ahead of Dallas, at 17. Now, if Atlanta doesn't take him at 16 and Atlanta goes and gets the corner, Chaisson is going to be a guy I think teams may say, hey, like Baltimore even at 28, Seattle at 27, loves pass rushers, okay? Tennessee at 29. Somebody like that I could see jumping up maybe 5, 6, 7 spots to get him.
Mel Kiper Jr. here on the Will Cain Show. So obviously, I mean, everybody knows, I'm a huge Cowboy fan, so you're bringing up guys at 17. Here's what I've noticed, and this isn't about the Cowboys. This is actually going to be about the draft at large.
Mm-hmm.
Every person that I've seen mocked to the Cowboys or who they're interested in, it's mainly Kalyvon Chaisson, Kenneth Murray, or C.J. Henderson. Setting Murray aside, I'm hearing Henderson goes way higher. Now you're telling me people are going to be trading up for Chaisson. So that means to me, well, somebody else we've been presuming in those top 12, 13, 14 picks is dropping. So who is it that's going to get pushed down? All these guys are getting pushed up.
Well, Mekhi Becton, you know, with the test result, and then obviously the weight management. Well, you know, he was 364. What's he going to maintain, the left tackle from Louisville? Well, you know, so I think he could get pushed down just a bit. I think you mentioned the guys for the Cowboys. How about Xavier McKinney? He's been mocked there a little bit, safety out of Alabama. There was talk today about will they draft a quarterback at some point. McCarthy liked to do that in Green Bay. So maybe not, obviously not in the first. Stack's the quarterback. They'll get that all, you know, fixed up. But in terms of a quarterback at some point for them. But obviously, Chase on the pass rusher is the kind of guy I think that they may be able to find. I think there's some guys like Alex Highsmith at Charlotte. I think there's some underrated guys, Will, that you can get maybe third to fifth round that may be able to help them in that regard. And then obviously you think about the cornerback spot. Henderson's gone by then, which I think he will be. Then you're talking about maybe in the second round, Jeff Gladney out of TCU would be a possibility at that point. I think Trayvon Diggs, Alabama, I'm not as high on him as some are, but he's going to probably figure in that general area. Damon Arnett out of Ohio State's another one. So I think the cornerback spot could basically fall that way for them in round two.
The Jags, to me, are one of the most fascinating teams in the draft, mm-hmm. Mel. I think there is some sentiment, people starting to wonder, are the Jags setting themselves up for next year? Are they setting themselves up to be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes? Or Gardner Minshew turns out to be amazing. One of their two options, right? But mm-hmm. but Tua could drop to them right at 9. They could end up with Tua. I'm trying to figure out what the Jags' plan is here. Is it to put their powder dry for 2021, or are they going to fire this year if somebody like Tua drops to them?
Heck of a place to be in, because they like Gardner Minshew. There's a lot to like about the way Minshew played. Who's to say Gardner Minshew, forget where he was drafted, forget the perception going in, forget Luke Falk hadn't made it out of the same program, and everybody, he's in the NFL now. And if you go back and watch those tapes of Jacksonville's games, he was impressive, Will. And for a rookie, are you kidding, for anybody? So again, if Gardner Minshew is the guy, then you don't have to worry about anything with Trevor Lawrence. Wasn't like Trevor Lawrence looked like all world at the end of that season, okay, last season. So we'll see on that one. I was tanking for Tua. Where's Tua ending up? Not number one. It's Joe Burrow. So I think you look at Jacksonville trying to trade Leonard Fournette, as you said, you know, trying to tear it down and build it back up. Ninth pick, maybe it's for sale. There's talk Atlanta could go up there and get, like I say, the cornerback, and then they move down from 9 maybe to 16. So Jacksonville's a rough team to figure because you don't know what direction they want to be going in. They want to build around Minshew, like I say, find the air. What if Tua is there? What if Herbert's there? You know, what if Miami and the Chargers both pass on quarterbacks? Aaron Rodgers, I said, brought this up today. Aaron Ryan and Peter Schrager brought it up last week that he doesn't know if Miami's going to take one. And then Peter King doesn't know if the Chargers are going to take one. Well, guess what? I didn't think Aaron Rodgers would drop past the top five when he came out. He was projected to go number one 3 weeks before that draft with Alex Smith. And there he is in the 20s. Everybody passed on him, Will. So maybe Miami can circle back at 18 and pass on the quarterback and still get one at 18. And, you know, maybe somebody else that didn't expect a quarterback to be like New England trades up from 23 to get Tua. You know about the Belichick-Saban connection. So it'll be fascinating. It's fascinating going in. It'll be even more crazy and chaotic if 5 and 6 don't become core. Or one of those two pass. I don't think both will, but if one of those two passes on a quarterback, then Tua or Herbert, along with Jordan Love, is dropping.
Do you think that's going to happen, by the way? Do you think one of those quarterbacks are going to slide?
I don't know, Will. I don't like to talk definitively about things that come secondhand, and nobody at Miami or the Chargers has told me anything, so I'm not getting anything from them. All we know for certainty, Will, about this draft is number one is going to be Burrow to Cincinnati, and number two is going to be Chase Young to Washington. After that, all bets are off. And trying to do a mock with no pro days, teams have said it's going to be wild and crazy because nobody that you talk to in the league, this is the dangerous part. When you talk to people in the league, Will, pro days is where all the scouts talk. They talk. They chatter, right? They go out, they have dinner. They talk. Well, they don't have any of that this year. So they're not getting a lot of feedback on what other teams may do nearly as much as they did in past years. And that impacts conversations that we all have, okay? So a lot of this stuff is going to be just going back to the tape, trust in your eyes, trust in what you saw. And what I'm going to do in that final mock is put guys, I like Jordan Brooks at Texas Tech a lot, linebacker. Love Michael Pittman Jr., wide receiver USC. If I love a guy, I'm going to say Ekwid. I'm putting him in there because I see it. Tape is tape. I in the sky doesn't lie. I'm going to maybe put those guys in over some of the guys that were projected to be first-rounders a month ago.
If the Jags sell the 9th pick, I'm convinced they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence. I'm convinced. If they sell the 9th pick. But All right, Mel. I always enjoy talking to you, man. Have fun this week. It's a big one.
I'll try, Will. You have a great week, pal. See you, buddy.
Mel Kiper Jr. here on the Will Cain Show. My internet's out, Nuno. I have no idea what live read you want me to do, but I'll do it in the last segment when we'll talk about whether or not it really is all Jerry Krause's fault in Chicago. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We're getting some fun podcasts lined up, by the way, our long-form interviews. You know what we ought to do, guys? We ought to do them with Mel, but not about, like, who's going to get drafted where. Like, how does Mel go about becoming the biggest draft guru out there? I'm sure that story's been told, but I don't know it. Do you know Mel's story, any of you guys? Like, how did Mel become Mel Kiper Jr.?
Yeah, I've heard him tell it a few times. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. I think we should talk to Mel in long-form. Scott in L.A., what's up? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will. Thanks for letting me on. I just wanted to basically say something real quick. Although it's very easy to blame Jerry Krause and Reinsdorf, and certainly Krause deserves most of the blame, as somebody who lived through it, I actually attributed this falling of the dynasty and falling apart a good deal of it to Michael Jordan himself. You have to remember, at the time, it's unheard of now, so people looking at it through this lens would not see it that way. But at the time, the only person in basketball that had gotten a coach fired or had gotten the coach he wanted was Magic Johnson when he had Westhead replaced for Pat Riley. Outside of that, that was a boundary that was not crossed by NBA players, despite how big and bad and great they were. And so in a sense, I think Michael Jordan overplayed his hand. He could have simply kind of fallen in line at that point, like all of the other players in the league did outside of Magic, and just gone with a different coach and just kept that train rolling to win more rings. But he has to get some of the blame for, you know, playing chicken and ending up, you know, Krause and Reinsdorf not folding and standing firm like all owners did at that point. It's easy now to Tuesday morning quarterback, but at the time, that really was a play that probably should not have been made, even by the great Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Scott, but this is like, you step back and you go, okay, this is why I have trouble with how simplistic it is, because it seems so obvious. It seems impossible. Let me get this straight. You've won 5 NBA championships, 5 in 7 years. You've got the greatest player of all time. You've got an explosive personality in Dennis Rodman. You've got another top 15 player at that time of all time in Scottie Pippen. And you've got the coach that brings them all together. Why mess with it? And if I'm Jordan, I've won all this with Phil Jackson. I've seen all this come together. I'm going to fight for that. I'm going to fight to keep all that together. I mean, obviously you've heard me struggle here today with, it just seems too obvious to lay it all at the feet of Jerry Krause. It just seems too easy and simple to make him the villain. But I am capable of seeing the other side, like, what are you doing tinkering with that? Dynasties are impossible to create. Championships are near impossible to win. So why are you messing with one that potentially had what? Another 1 or 2 left in it? You could have had 8 and 10 years, 7 and 9 years. Who knows what you could have had?
To consider is, Jordan, because if you saw last night where he was involved in granting Dennis Rodman a vacation, that was unheard of as well until I saw last night. So maybe he had reason to think he could stand his ground with his coach, but obviously that was not the case. He had a lot more power than anybody ever did, but not enough to sway the coach or the GM. Yeah. That's all.
All right, Scott. Thanks for the call. Joe in Illinois is on the phone lines. What's up, Joe?
Yo, what up, Mr. Kane? I want to say, first of all, Scott is stupid, but just because he don't know what he's talking about. But the other thing is, before I get on Jerry Krause, man, I miss you on First Take. You need to get on there to check Stephen A. Smith.
I appreciate that. Thank you, man.
But as far as Jerry Krause, the only thing, I guess this is a question and a statement. I wonder why we are waiting to the last minute to talk about this, about Jerry Krause. Dude died in 2017, and I don't appreciate that they are just now standing up to talk about this guy when he died. I mean, they should have did it before he passed. That's my thing.
So I guess all of these interviews, you don't have to go anywhere. These interviews are probably done in the past 18 months. So it would have been after Jerry Krause died. I share a little bit of that. It's like, who's gonna, it just feels one-sided, right? Like, I just want to hear his side of the story. That's what it is. In the end, I'm not gonna defend Jerry Krause because it does seem obvious to me, but it just does seem a little one-sided. And the one-sidedness means the explanation's too simple. It's either A, Jerry Krause was a moron. That one's a little bit hard to accept because he helped build this dynasty, right? Or B, he's a villain. He's an egomaniac, and he didn't get enough credit, and he had a Napoleon complex, a short man syndrome, and he didn't like Jordan messing with him all the time, and for some reason, Phil Jackson became the guy he hated. That's certainly possible. We all know that dude, or some version of that dude, to one degree or another, right? So he exists, but I would, and it's not even about fairness. I don't, you know, fair is a four-letter word. It's more about truth. I'd like to hear the other side to see if it truly is the story, Joe.
And not only that, he don't have – I looked him up the other day because I enjoyed the show last night. But I looked him up. He don't have any kids. Everybody's gone. Everybody's passed. So who's going to speak on his behalf? So I don't appreciate that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it was wrong, some things that happened. I feel some type of way about it, but – like you said, he can't defend himself or nobody on his behalf.
Yeah. I appreciate it, Joe. I'm with you. And that's the weird thing, because I think, like everybody back in the control room, I definitely knew Nuno's, like, in our pre-show meeting, you're just ready to say, no. Krause was a jerk. And I'm like, okay, maybe. And I'm like, Joe, I'm like, maybe. I think that could be possibly true. It might even mean probably true. But I feel a little bit like the story's incomplete. And by the way, we're only 2 episodes into a 10-episode deal. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a twist or two left in this. The Last Dance continues this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Immediately after the show airs, listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby. The after show presented by State Farm and AT&T. The guys will be joined by director Jason Hare to talk about the week's show and the behind-the-scenes stories of making the episode. Subscribe now to Jalen and Jacoby. The After Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We voted on the best stand-up comedy special of all time. Mike A. won. Or it's not all time, since 2000. With Dave Chappelle's Killing Them Softly. There's your winner. Go enjoy.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.